Williams sets. Here's the pitch. Swing and a fly ball to right field. Pretty well hit. Freelick back at the wall. He jumps. It's gone. He did it. He did it. Pete Alonso with the most memorable home run of his career. Pumps his fist as he rounds second. It's a three-run homer. He's given the Mets a 3-2 lead. They all pour out of the dugout. Alonso on his way to home plate. They're waiting for him. He hits the plate. He is first congratulated by Nimmo. Hugged by Lindor. There are a dozen Mets waiting for him outside the dugout. Pete Alonso keeps this fairy tale season going with the fairy tale swing of his career. 3-2 New York.
And Peterson ready to go to work against him. First pitch, swinging a liner toward short. Picked by Lindor on one hop, runs to second, one throws to first. Out at first, out at first. Put it in the box. The Mets are out at the mound, pouncing on each other. The Brewers may want to have a look at this just to be sure, but if this holds, this party is headed to Philadelphia. The New York Mets have won this wild card series as Lindor played that soft liner perfectly, waited to get a short hop, raced to the bag at second, touched up, fired to first, and the New York Mets have defeated the Milwaukee Brewers by a score of 4-2. They scored four runs in the top of the ninth inning, and this crowd here in Milwaukee is utterly stunned. The Mets now are coming in from the bullpen, others from the dugout. Carlos Mendoza, the Mets manager, pumping his fists against his chest, raising his hands towards the crowd. And the New York Mets have pulled off the doozy of the year.
Well, look, we talk about resiliency. We talk about never quitting, playing to last out, all that stuff. And it's cliche unless you do it. And this group has consistently done it. And look, I think, you know, we just saw one of the greatest games in Mets history. It's a franchise that's had notable late inning, late game comebacks in the playoffs. And to be a part of this with this group, it's really special.
What does it mean for Pete? I know he's been publicly talking about how it hasn't bothered him and he stayed confident, but what do you think this one meant for him in particular?
He deserves this moment. He's been working so hard all year. He's a great teammate, and he deserved this moment. It's a great Met. He's someone who has given a tremendous amount to this franchise. To get a truly signature moment like that, that will go down in the history books, the Met fans will talk about for generations. He deserves it. I'm glad he's got it.
Is it possible for you to describe what was going through your head as that ball comes off the bat?
Look, the honest truth is, like, I expected something good to happen in that ninth inning. I really did. Like, there was no way this season was going to end without something happening in that ninth inning. Whether he scored two or three runs, I don't know. But we were going to put together good at-bats. You know, then Lindor draws the walk, and you feel pretty good. You know what's coming behind him. You know how much pride these guys take in what this group has accomplished this year. And yet you had a feeling something good was going to happen there.
All right, finally, David, I saw you as the team was celebrating, just looking on from the dugout. Looked like you were looking on with immense pride. What was going through your mind watching that celebration?
I'm just really happy for the organization. And this group has fought so hard to get to this point. And to keep it going like this, for those guys to have that moment on the field, to truly enjoy this together, it was cool to watch.
Oh my God, todo lo malo echado pa allá. Oh my God, dame salud y prosperidad. Here I go, here I go. Esa maldito candelita, let them know, here I go, here I go. From Rio Fair to where we go, where that is so. Ellos no pueden conmigo, ellos no pueden contigo. Felicidades que partiste el pan de mi amigo. De la calle hasta las grandes ligas. Siempre y que siga, que siga. Oh my God, todo lo malo echado para allá. Oh my God, dame salud y prosperidad.
From 0-5 to OMG, what a ride! The Mets are going to the postseason in 2024.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Friday, October the 4th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. Don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to a champagne-soaked edition of the Talking Mets Podcast this early Friday morning, and I don't think I've really recovered. I slept very well, I have to tell you. So for those of you who follow me over on X at Talking Mets No G, our good friend, as we've been doing after every game, Anthony Rivera, Subway to Shea, and I collaborate on a Twitter Spaces, you know, basically reacting to the last game, taking comments from the fans. What a great night last night. What great commentary from the fans. I think we went on for a couple of hours after the game. And this is actually, to be quite honest, is going to be one of the harder shows I'm going to do because it's not this logical, balanced, typical Talking Mets podcast, because how can you be after you watch the game last night? So it'll be a combination of a lot of experiences, emotion, and maybe some reflective thoughts. And I hope that that works for you guys, because I always pride myself on being not a fan. You know I want the Mets to win. You know I love the organization and the team. But in order to do this properly and to get respect and credit, you always have to keep your, whatever you feel that your radio journalism integrity, you have to keep that intact. And when you get to certain points in certain parts of seasons and games, you get tested. And I think last night you get tested with that. So hopefully this works. I guess I'll start off with this. I'll share my experience, because as I was listening to the fans' experiences, those who called into the Twitter space, it reminds me that sports, it really is about that, because you're hearing people say how they were walking their dog and how they were thinking of this person and they're holding their child. And it's these simple little things. You're like, oh, why does a baseball game do that? Because in a lot of ways, this is a family. You know, you don't know these guys and they may be gone. They come and go, but you watch them every night for 180 or so days. How much is it? 162 games, 180 days. And then you have the postseason, and it's like drama, euphoria, and then gone, because that's the way the postseason is, especially in this wild card round. You don't even get a chance to take a breath. So after the Mets had lost game two, I'll be transparent. I was confident that they could win, but I wasn't convinced. And I knew it was going to be a tough game. And I was out and about, and I get home just in time for the start of the game. And, you know, I was basically watching the game on the couch with my wife. My dogs are sitting there. And for 8 innings plus, up until Alonso's at bat, I pretty much sat there pretty stoic, arms crossed, just soaking it in, assessing, analyzing. And after the back-to-back home runs off of Buto in the 7th inning, I'll be pretty frank, I was reflecting a lot on this team, this season, where this team is going to go, because I was prepared to pretty much do a baseball eulogy. And not because I didn't have faith in the Mets, I was just looking at the facts. The facts were as follows. The Brewers had an excellent bullpen all year, and the Mets weren't sniffing that bullpen. They didn't look like a team on the offensive side that was going to even be able to work some counts, the things that they did, or what Lindor did in the 9th inning, to get runners on base, to even make this a game. And Devin Williams, 1.25 ERA, looked good the night before. What were the odds that the Mets were going to come back with all the momentum go Milwaukee's way? I mean, basically for 24 hours, from the point where Phil Maton gave up the tying home run to Churio, it was all Milwaukee, and they had not gotten a hit off the Mets bullpen. So I was sitting there ready to take it in, and I wasn't mad. I really wasn't. I was it always stings and hurts as you lose. And I know that would have been the case if that's what happened last night. So all I kept saying to myself in the ninth, I thought, was let's see how he goes to Lindor. Let's see how he pitches to Lindor. Let's see how that at-bat goes, because I think it's going to set the tone for the rest of the inning. And when Lindor worked out that walk and fouled off a couple of really tough pitches in that at-bat, I said, okay, that's interesting. And then Vientos, of course, strikes out. And when Nimmo gets the base hit to make it runners at the corners, that's when I was like, this could get really interesting. And it was going through my mind, and I'm not just saying this now, and I was thinking about Alonso's three-run home run. And he dropped the pop-up a couple of innings earlier, and then Diaz got out of that anyway, striking out Contreras. Really, there was a point in time during this game where I said to myself, and it's amazing how one at-bat could change that. Maybe the conversation isn't about should the Mets pay Pete Alonso and how much he's worth. Maybe the conversation is it best for both sides to walk away regardless of what plan B is, because Pete looks so stressed and lost. The fans are so tired of him. He's going to be the GOAT and the scapegoat if they lose, regardless of how the game ends, regardless of the fact that there are eight other guys in that lineup that could have driven in Lindor at some point earlier in the game, that could have gotten a big hit, that couldn't have got a home run. And when he came up, I said, okay, Pete, usually Pete, throughout his Mets career, from the day that he was a big leaguer, has stepped into the moment. He actually had, if you guys remember, a game-tying home run in Milwaukee his first season. And I think it was in May, where he was in the middle of a little bit of a slump, an early season slump that year. And it was one of those situations where he almost willed that home run. You've seen him in, and I know it's the home run derby, how he's stepped up to the moment. And over the course of his career, up until maybe the last year and a half or so, Pete has been a guy that you'd want up in a big spot. I mean, you remember game-winning home runs against the Cardinals and Tampa Bay, and he's had them. So this was almost like, okay, this is it. This is his referendum on his Mets career. It's unfair. But if he strikes out or grounds into a double play, it may be time, because that's all we're going to be talking about. And we would have been talking about it here, and I think that would have been a fair conversation. I will say, as I watched the at-bat and he got ahead in the count, the way he was locked in and focused gave me a lot of hope. It felt different. He wasn't flailing. He didn't seem like it was a moment getting too big for him. And when he hit the ball the other way, he knew it was out. I knew it was going to be close. And I believe it's Bowers in right field. As I watch him going back, and I'm watching him. And when it went over the wall, and everything of I'm talking about is just me sitting there on the couch. I'm stoic. I jumped up and I let out a primal scream, scared the bejesus out of everybody in the house. To tell you the truth, if you listen to me on the X space, I pulled a calf, and pretty badly, I have to tell you. So it's a combination. I was drinking water, but probably not enough water. I was tense and upset, and that's, you know, contracting your muscles. I'm sitting on a couch, my arms crossed, and when you release like that, I guess everything just a pfft, and I'm in a lot of pain, to tell you the truth. Not that you care. I'm in a lot of pain. I mean, this is going to go down for one of the books, right? So, and then you don't even have a chance to calm yourself down. And now you're starting to think about the ninth inning, who's going to come in. And then Winker gets on, and Marte, who has, for all the times that we've talked about him being shot, and sometimes he does look shot, sometimes he doesn't run hard to first if he knows it's going to be an out. He has been that kind of hitter since his Mets career started, where he knows, let's just go the other way. And he takes I think that's a very important run, because when, Frelick got the hit in the ninth inning, it prevents that stolen base from being big. It changes the whole complexion, because then, you know, the Brewers will try to steal and then try to get the runner over and try to tie the game. And then, you know, there you are, you're in an extra inning game and everything is different. So that's a big play. And then once you get out of the inning, now you're saying to yourself, okay, now I'm thinking, I'm walking through the iterations. You know, do you try to get an out from Diaz? Could you push Diaz more? And I hear Peterson, and actually I felt pretty good. And when the ball was hit the other way by Terang, and what a pest. And Lindor made that play, that short hop, which was a tough play. And it's just all this, it's like fast, your emotions are going. And at that point, you see the double play, you just let out another scream, and you're like, wow, they did it. And they're moving on to the NLDS, and what a game. And I said this on the Spaces last night. I'm putting 86 away, because you can't compare Game 6 in Houston and Game 6 against Boston, and this team hasn't won a championship. If this team wins a championship and has more moments like that, maybe we could have the conversation about how that rivals with some of those big 86 moments. But I had said earlier in the week, and I don't know if I said it on the show, and I probably have said it on the show or on the Spaces, how I thought Game 5 of the NLDS against the Dodgers, how they won on the road in a really tough environment, a team that wasn't expected to really do anything, and kind of in the middle of the season in August, late in the season, figured, okay, Nationals don't want the division. It seems wide open. Why not us? It was, I call it the Harold and Kumar version, the Harold and Kumar go to White Castle team of Mets history. I'm going to jump on that one. Maybe that's a goofy thing, but I'm going to jump on it. But after last night's game, after watching Matt, after the Pete home run, the play by Lindor, the environment, which I wouldn't say is as raucous and tough as that Dodgers crowd almost 10 years ago, but a good crowd, and a crowd that was ready to celebrate, and a Midwestern crowd that hates New York. Adonazio is there. You know he hates Cohen. He's trying to get ready to celebrate. And you know that the whole, oh, the Brewers only need $100 million to beat the big moneyed Mets. That was pretty fulfilling. And I think to date, and I was at other big games. I mean, I think of Todd Pratt's home run against the Diamondbacks. I was sitting last row of the upper deck watching Benny Agbayani and that big extra inning, a game against the Giants in the NLDS in 2000. Trying to think about 06 at this point, or 15, you know, I'd bring up the Dodgers. But this is it. This is the cherry on top. And in a week where you had that emotional win in Atlanta, how it seems like every game since maybe the All-Star break or thereabouts has been a referendum on the Mets or their need to win, it's almost like everything was just, it all was released, because the fans, you, have taken so much crap for so long. And I really mean that. I've been thinking about this yoke and this conversation that we've had pretty much since I started doing Talking Mets. And I've adjusted my thoughts on it, because I said, yeah, it's the expectations of 86, the disappointment that has come. But really, and it's ironic that the Mets are going to be playing the Phillies. Because I think this yoke, and I think this whole thing, and this whole ghost or demon or gorilla on the back, or whatever you want to call it, whatever is appropriate, it could call it anything, really started after the 06 loss to the Cardinals, after Beltran striking out. I heard somebody say, or was it, I read on Twitter, I don't know if it was on the Spaces or it was on Twitter, I can't remember, everything's a blur right now, that this was the moment that we wanted Beltran to have back in 06 off of Wainwright. And that's interesting. I didn't think of that. Because if you think about that ninth inning, Reyes hits a shot and Edmonds comes in and makes the play. That could have been a big gapper. And I remember that night thinking with Cliff Floyd swinging away, trying to go for the downs. And all I said, well, Beltran has to do is, he doesn't have to get a home run here. He just has to get a big hit in the gap and the Mets are going to win this ball game. And sure enough, you know, I thought about that. That was pretty appropriate. I mean, look, this team all year has, and it's funny, I say since the All-Star break, every game has been a playoff game. It's really been since Memorial Day, because that team needed a big June to get back in it legitimately so that they didn't rip this thing apart. So maybe that's the character building you've seen. I think it was Zeal that said that he thinks the culture created the winning. I've always said it's winning and it's all that stuff that creates the culture. I don't know. I mean, it may be a great point. And Andy Martino talking about how it's the most emotional clubhouse he's been in. And I thought of, and it's funny he brought that up because I thought of that watching Winker and Lindor embracing in the locker room during the celebration. I'm like, Winker's been here 5 minutes. And there's Winker getting a big play, a guy that we all hated just a couple of months ago after he beat the Mets on the 4th of July with that 11 o'clock game. So it's just, you want this thing to continue. I don't know where it's going to go. The Phillies are going to be a hell of a matchup. They're going to have to beat their former teammate in Zach Wheeler, who's become arguably the best pitcher in baseball. And it's a matchup that I think is almost 20 years in the making. And it's a team, Philadelphia, that has really taken away or added to the pain that Mets fans have experienced over these nearly two decades. Because when 06 went bad, it wasn't the Phillies that made it bad that year. The Mets dominated the Phillies that year. It was the following year with the collapse where they were the benefactors of the Mets' pain. It was the Phillies that benefited when the Mets couldn't get their stuff together after 06, where they had the golden age of Philadelphia baseball, where they had the championship in 08 and the run till 11, where there's going to be a generation of Phillies fans that remember this, their Phillies team fondly because of that 08 title and because of that run, that maybe started loving baseball because of that. So while you're in pain, while the Mets fail and they collapse and then you get into the baseball purgatory era with Alderson and Madoff and all that, the Phillies were benefiting from that 90 miles south down the turnpike. And then a couple of years ago, the Mets lost to San Diego. No, that's not the Phillies' fault. But who is it that went to the unlikely run who went to the World Series? It was the Phillies. And the Phillies, who the Mets beat time and time again that season, here they are. They're building that second golden age of Philadelphia baseball. So in a way, it's now the Mets' turn to take what the Phillies want away from them, to take back what really a lot of people, and myself included, thought after 06 was the Mets' time to have their age for a bunch of fans, younger fans, who weren't around or old enough for 86, or guys like me who were around but just learning the world and sports as a young 9, 10-year-old. And, you know, where's the time for those fans? And now it might be it. Look, I told you this is the innocent climb. I think what they accomplished in Atlanta, I would have came on here and said, it's, and I will say this, no matter what happens, it's about how you take the success and the experience and leverage it and move forward. But put that aside for now. That's a conversation for another day. The Mets have a legitimate shot of winning this tournament. It's not going to be easy. Their bullpen's iffy. They don't necessarily have a lineup that comes at you inning after inning. Phillies have that to a certain degree, but they have something where this team just has this little karma going. I know it's hard to explain. I don't want to say it's an 04 Red Sox thing or a 16 Cubs thing, because a couple of days, if the Phillies play the way that we know they can play, you know, you could be coming back to Citi Field in an elimination game. And playing in Philadelphia is going to be tough. You think it's tough in Milwaukee. You think back in 2015 it's tough in Dodger Stadium. You saw how that park could be. Now, maybe the Mets fans mitigate that a little bit by coming down the turnpike. And it's funny how we just saw this classic Knicks-Sixers series and how the Knicks fans overtook was the Wells Fargo Center when the Knicks went down there for games 3 and 4 and 6. And I think Philadelphia fans remember that, so maybe the Knicks are going to play into the Philly fans saying, we're not going to let you take over our ballpark. But it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. I think today is a day about enjoying the win, enjoying listening to, and I know it was a long intro, but listening to Howie's calls, listening to Stern's comments after the game, and then ending it. And that, look, I know it could be a copyright infringement. Who the hell knows? Who the hell cares? Listen, Iglesias, I want to promote your song, but ending with an upbeat line from the Candelita OMG song. So, you know, that's really where my head is at right now. It's not here to break down and analyze and talk about the Philadelphia series on a granular level. We'll have plenty of time to do that. The Mets, just like going into Milwaukee, are not set up great to probabilistically have the best chance of winning going into Philadelphia. It sounds like Tylor Megill will start game one. But they haven't been set up to really probabilistically in the best way win for a while now, with Lindor going down and how they had to win on that final day of the season and then fly here, fly there, and go into Milwaukee and really not have their pitching set up and really have not have their two best bullpen arms for one of the three games here in Milwaukee. And ironically, that's the game they win. But that's that. You know, the other thing that came to mind, and it really was as I was doing the Twitter spaces with Anthony and listening to the fans talk and listening to the connection that, you know, he certainly has a great connection with the fans. And this is, I haven't had that kind of interaction because up until the last week, I never did a Twitter space. And maybe that's something I should do more because my interaction with the fan base is more with emails or X or, you know, me talking to you and maybe you listening, but us not really knowing each other. But it reminded me of how much fun this thing is, the connection you make, how this brings together all sorts of people that would have absolutely no way of meeting each other if it wasn't for the Mets, if it wasn't for social media, if it wasn't for that connection. And this fan base has been through a lot. In a lot of ways, it's cruel what the media does to this fan base. And how they report on the team and how they use the fan base as Charlie Brown in the football. It's cruel. I've always hated it. I think the fan base has exacerbated it. And I've had a complicated relationship with the fans and you. And I know some of you listen. And I read the comments. I see when I say something and you go on the Apple podcast and you leave a review, a one star. And I'm like, well, that's not really what the Apple podcast is for. But I get it. You're mad at me. I mean, I remember when I called out the fans for the negativity the first homestand of the season. And I've done this before about how I've said, you know, you need to be better. You're part of the problem. And I lose followers and listeners for it. And people are really angry. And I get it. It's your right. You don't have to sit here. Why am I paying this guy for a newsletter if he's going to tell me I'm a jerk? Why am I going to listen to a Mets content creator tell me how I need to be better? Because sometimes the truth hurts. And in a lot of ways, no one else is going to do it because it's not popular and nobody wants to have their business impacted. But I always speak the truth and from the heart. And when I do it because I want you to understand it doesn't have to be this way. It could be better. We could hold the team accountable and not do novenas and contribute to the negative energy that surrounds this club. And I think that's changing. And I hope you understand that because this show is, I think, a small part of it all. The fact that I'm still around after all these years doing this kind of thing. And I've been doing this since 07. So I was around for the collapses. I was around for baseball purgatory. I wasn't doing this in 15 when they went to the World Series, but I was around the year after. And that whole collapse of the five aces and how the Mets weren't able to leverage that good vibe from 15, I was around for that. But even after 2015 and the energy and the good vibes of that team, I don't think I saw the worm turn like I feel like it's turning now. How this group wants things to be different. How this group wants the Mets to go into a new era. To leave the negativity of the last two decades behind. To leave the Wilpons behind. To leave Carlos Beltran strikeout behind, to leave the collapse of 07 behind, to leave the disappointment of post-2015 behind, to leave Terry Pendleton behind, to leave the 80s failures behind, to leave the Braves of the 90s behind. It's in the books. It shouldn't matter anymore. It shouldn't matter. And if we could continue to do that in the role that the fans play, and I want to see that crowd, not the Novena crowd on Tuesday night at Citi Field. I want to see the raucous Citi Field crowd that's going to make Philadelphia look like a church. Because I know Mets fans can do that. I know they can. You know, as far as the game, I said going in it was get the ball to Diaz. And they got the ball to Diaz. He didn't have great stuff, by the way. He was off a little bit. Give him credit. He was off. He did just enough to keep the Mets in the ball game. He rebounded against Contreras with a drop pop-up by Pete. Lindor, from start, from first pitch to the final out, played the MVP role. He didn't get the big home run, but that play was tough in the ninth inning. And he was there being the only reason why the Mets even had a base runner up until that point, really. And he continues to impress me more and more and make me eat my words about how much I did not think he was worth the money, and I didn't think he was the guy that was going to be the foundation of the Mets' future. And boy, have I been wrong. And he's going to be here, and he's going to be influential, because if you watch him pregame, after the game, the Coens love him. They love him. Like, this is Cohen's guy. And that's one of the things that I think Cohen, as an owner, and he gets it, because he knows that his players are his partners. He's not there in the ivory tower, you know, looking at them as the help, like some other owners. He's looking at them as partners. And I don't know what's going to happen with Pete in the offseason. And there's still a lot of debate about what he's worth and how much you can go and pay him. But you know, recency bias is a big thing in this sport. Pablo Sandoval got a big contract when I knew he was not a big contract guy because of a big postseason run in 2014 with the Giants, and the Red Sox gave it to him. So you got to be a little bit careful after the season of this stuff, but that's a conversation for another day. But I think as they go forward, as this thing, no matter where it goes, if it goes to the end and they win it all, or it ends some point in the next couple of weeks, I think Stearns and Cohen have to say, okay, we've got a good thing going. You have to move pieces in and out. That's inevitable. Every championship team has to do that. Every playoff team has to do that. As you take the innocent climb and leverage it and grow into the next era of Mets history, who's staying around for the duration and who's a player for the moment? I think Pete showed you, hey, it's still in me. And maybe there are reasons why he struggled this year. And if you don't think Boris is not going to use this, he probably ran as the ball was going over the fence to his sales pitch book and said, look, forget what the numbers say. Pete, in a big moment, is a big player. And he may be right. I mean, other than Aaron Judge, who else has the ability to hit a big home run like that? I think the thing there, and Pete's been bad. Forgive my voice. I'm still recovering. Pete's been bad. But maybe we're picking on him because he's not Aaron Judge. He's not MVP Goldschmidt. He's Paul Konerka. That's still a pretty good player. Now, you can't pay Paul Konerka $350 million for a contract, but there's a value there. And there's a pathway where Pete, let's not forget what Pete has done here and how important he was in 2019 and how it was he, McNeil, that carried that team offensively. 2019 was the year of Pete, while the rest of the team was waiting to be traded or for the roof to cave in, or, you know, the fans of the media worried about Jared Kelnick. Pete was having a career rookie season, better maybe than Aaron Judge. And he was a big part of 2022, driving in, what, 130 runs, big walk-off home runs. So it's in there. I don't think he's done. I think he has to evolve into the next version of Pete Alonso as he gets older, and the highly paid, high expectations Pete Alonso. I think Pete's learning that the goofy energy, aw shucks, let's just go out and have fun version, those stakes get raised as you ask for money, as you get deeper into this thing with the Mets and their fans. But maybe now this team, and I think they're always relaxed, but maybe now they could say, hey, let's just keep doing this thing. It's we got stuff that we can build on. So, you know, that's kind of my analysis. It's more of an emotion, a conversation. I also have to say, you know, we talked last night about turning points of the season. And our good friend, because I can't help but not, is whether it be Sean or Liam, our friends from the UK, which I hope you really guys are doing well, because your support of this show, it has always been appreciated, the fact that we have all these Talking Mets listeners from across the pond. But our Sean in Bristol, UK, talked about how we bring up Grimace, we bring up OMG, we didn't bring up the London series and the big win with Torrens, with the play at the plate against those Philadelphia Phillies. And hey, Sean, that's right, man. I mean, London, and that's ironic because of the big Mets fan contingent in the UK that we never knew about before this show. London deserves a little bit of a shout out. So there you go. But I'm going to leave you with this, because now I'm going to go rest up, because we're going to have more spaces. We're going to have the Philadelphia series. We're going to have plenty to talk about, at least for another week. I want to thank you guys for supporting this show. Whether you support it by listening to the podcast or the podcast in the newsletter, if you're listening and you're not a newsletter subscriber, I'm going to give you a gift. I'm going to contact Substack. Anybody who's not a subscriber, who's just doing free or just, you know, hasn't had the chance to take a leap, I'm going to give you a 30-day free trial, and then you can do what you want after that. So just contact me at Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, directly, and say, hey, Mike, could you put me in? And I have to contact Substack, and I'll have them do it. And that's going to be on me. I'll get Substack to waive the fees and all that stuff. I think sometimes they just give you a free post or something. I'll take care of that because I want to thank you. And for those who are subscribers, who are longtime listeners, I thank you too. I wish I could go out and thank you all personally. I can't do that. And those who support, even if you support it in a little way with the newsletter, this is why I do this. Not to go out and go to Turks and Caicos on the money, but to continue to put this product out so we could have moments like this that we could share. Because to me, that's a good use of all our resources. And I know at times I've been a pain in the rear end. I know at times I annoy you. I know at times I'm not. I say things that kind of rankle you. And I'm not the touchy-feely, fuzzy fan content creator because that's not what I want to be. And there's so many good ones out there. And there's so many content creators out there. Really. And I'm not a certain generation. So I'm a little bit older. So I get the knocks about... I'm not a boomer, actually. I'm Generation X. People call me that grouchy boomer. And I know that this day and age in our world that a certain younger generation has a lot of resentment towards people my age and older. And some of it's justified. I understand it. I'm not saying you're wrong. But all that stuff doesn't matter because I think that you can see we all could enjoy this thing together. And in the end, it's about enjoying the journey together. And last night is why we do it. The feeling, even if it lasts only a fleeting moment, the feeling is why we do it. And I hope that that comes across sincerely to you all. Because I'm humbled that anybody spends a minute of their time, because time is something you don't get back, listening to this show. It's easy to read a column. It's easy to read a tweet. It's not easy to spend week in and week out listening to 45 minutes to 60 minutes of conversation from a guy who's not on a call letter station or on ESPN or an SNY. So I've thoroughly enjoyed the moment. I've thoroughly enjoyed the ride to date. There's more to come. And I think that this is a growth for the Mets. I think this is a growth for us as a fan base. This is a growth for the Talking Mets audience. Only more positive things to come. So for those who are not on board or a subscriber, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. I'll get it. I'll check junk mail because sometimes they get popped in there. If you don't hear back from me, because you will, I'll personally hit back. Just hit me up on X and say, Mike, I emailed you. What's up? And I will. And away we go. I mean, there's not a lot of columns right now because what we're doing is straight postseason talk. But there will be. There'll be things for us to talk about and additional promotional content and videos. But I want to make sure everybody gets in some way, shape, or form a Talking Mets connection, not just paid subscribers and whatnot over the next how many weeks we have postseason baseball. So that's all I have for you. I'm tired. I had to get up and do this because I wanted to make sure I did my reaction. But I got to tell you, I'm tired. I'll be listening to calls and plays and post-game reactions just like the rest of you all day, talking to friends and family about what happened last night. And that's why we do this. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G, and of course, don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Friday. Rest up. Philadelphia, 4 o'clock on Saturday. Till then, take care, everybody.